All right, here we are, the month of December. We are in Columbus. Thank you very much, Mayor Linup, for having us here again today.
Oh, you're welcome back to Columbus anytime.
All right. I wanted to start just because I know it's been a month, but I have to ask you about the election because Columbus native Mike Pence is now the vice president-elect, and I'm sure that you're really excited about that.
It is exciting. It's hard to believe. From some perspectives, that a hometown boy ends up, just a few steps from the Oval Office. So we're all excited for Mike and confident he'll do a good job, and look forward to welcoming him home, after the inauguration. I'm not sure, we don't have anything planned, but we do have an intention to try to get together and commemorate his electoral success.
So there will be some event. Will that be open to the public, or is that going to be?
Oh yeah. But totally, none of that's been planned. But we certainly have it on our agenda of things to do. Yeah.
Have you reached out to Pence in any way in terms of congratulations or talked to him?
Yeah, even? I've sent him a few text messages just congratulated him on his electoral success, on a few of his speeches that I saw during the campaign. So we've had an opportunity to communicate.
I wanted to talk about property tax caps. We've talked about it many times over the years. Now we're in Columbus. We never talked about it here. But in particular, we talked a lot about it in Terre Haute, in one of the worst hit cities, still cutting budgets, trying to make up for the shortfall in revenue. Some cities such as Bloomington, though, not hit as much, citing university and property tax caps having a greater impact on more older industrial cities. How has Columbus fared?
Columbus has fared okay. All across with the county and the school system, we lose several million bucks a year due to the property tax caps, but it hasn't had an impact on the city itself. And I think a lot of that's got to do with the economic development efforts that we've had the last several decades. We've got a significant industrial base that continues to grow. And so, the industrial payers are not affected by the 1% cap that affects homeowners. They are affected by a 3% cap, and we don't hit that. And our gross rate for the city of Columbus is somewhere around 2.5%. So even the industrial payers get a little better break than what the state constitution would give them.
I know this is your first year as mayor, but overall, have there been any type of major budget adjustments to reflect any of those caps?
No, not really.
No.
We pretty much anticipate a similar revenue stream that what we've had years in the prior couple of years. So the revenue caps haven't forced us to change anything that we're doing.
Last couple of times you talked about a salary city review that was about set to get underway. You're hoping to find some discrepancies in city salary rates. Has that started, and have they found anything yet?
It has not started, and it won't until 2017. But we hope to have the answer sometime in June. It was discussed in one of the meetings I was in this morning that, what we want to try to find is places in the city where salaries are significantly different from what you might find out in the marketplace. There was a situation that developed here in this county last year where, they lost their entire IT department, and compensation had a lot to do with that. So we want to try to make sure that we don't sort of get askew from the market. And this is part of the reason for the study. At the same time, we've got fringe benefit programs, particularly our retirement plan and our health insurance plan, that we think are significant in compensation for employees. But we want to try to understand that a little better, to make sure that the plans are comparable to what somebody might find in the private sector. And if not, then that we are able to explain that to our employees so they understand the value of the plan.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that too in terms of what are you comparing it to? Are you comparing it to other cities as well in terms of the size of Columbus compared to, what city employees are making there?
Yeah, a little bit of both. Most of the comparisons will be to other municipalities, but we will also ask that these job descriptions that we're going to provide be compared to wages in the private sector, just to make sure that we are aware of what the competition is.
Quick follow-up, Columbus, along with three other Indiana cities, had an initial hearing on the lawsuit over LGBT rights this past month. The judge giving the conservative groups a chance to continue the lawsuit over LGBT protections, and this comes from those city ordinances that were passed. You were hoping the judge would just drop the lawsuit. So what happens now? What happens now?
Yeah, well, the first thing to understand, there were two changes. you know, with respect to the lawsuits. The lawsuit had named individuals as defendants, and in Columbus that included the members of the Human Rights Commission. And I think there were similar individuals or similar individuals who held similar positions in other communities who also got named. And the judge took those individuals out, and that was clearly the appropriate thing to do. The second thing that Judge Nation did was he required or allowed, I'm not sure exactly which verb to use, but we're going to bring the state of Indiana into the lawsuit. And so that will make a significant difference. I mean, part of the allegation that was brought was that the Indiana RFRA fix was unconstitutional. The RFRA was okay, but the fix was unconstitutional. And it's really not in the city's realm of opportunity to debate that. I mean, that's really is a state issue, and it's one the state attorney general needs to address. So, you know, those were two things that we had asked for, you know, as part of the response to the lawsuit, and two of those things that we got. Now, obviously, the third thing we were hoping for was that you know, the whole thing just go away. But no, the judge said that this is a lawsuit that needs to be heard and needs to be tried, and so we're going to do that. Now, the attorneys are preparing to file some intermediary appeal to reiterate or to restate some of the procedural questions that they had raised. And they're going to ask that this suit be allowed to appear before the State Court of Appeals. But I haven't heard yet, you know, how that has come out. That filing was to take place, and then the judge who ruled initially, Judge Nation from Hamilton County, he's going to rule again, you know, on the second appeal, so we'll just have to wait to see how that goes.
Right, and as we know, this stuff, all proceedings take a while to happen. I mean, this was supposed to, I think we talked about some type of initial hearing back in, was it July?
Right.
And
right.
It got pushed back,
that
and
continued.
So we'll keep on this. But as far as you know, Columbus, the city continues, nothing changes.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah. No, nothing changes with respect to us and our human rights ordinance. We are still following the one that we've got.
And we've talked about long-term city railroad plans. More recently, I saw a report from the Republic stating that the city has heard several overpass options from traffic backups that I'm sure gets the attention of any motorist around here. And I know we talked about the studies that came out a few months
right.
ago. Is this in response to those studies?
Yes, it is. The studies sort of helped us identify the significance of the problem. And you know, the current estimate that we have is that the train will, once it's up to speed, well, not at the speed, so to speak, up to the traffic that we anticipate, you know, the delay per day, per hour, per vehicle, I think we actually call them vehicle hour delays, is, you know, going to be roughly in the 900 to 1,000 hours a day range, which is a significant number. I mean, it would introduce a significant inefficiency to activity here in Columbus. And so it gives us the reason to try to pursue other alternatives. We've identified several others, you know, to sort of keep the railroad where it is and, you know, build a series of overpasses that would link into the existing bridges into downtown. We've looked at, you know, an opportunity to try to move the railroad. You know, I don't know, you know, whether that's, you know, how realistic an option that is because it's pretty pricey, but the point was to try to take a look at these different alternatives and then as best we could to cost out the benefit to be derived. You know, if we're going to have 900 hours of delay each day if we do nothing, then what is it going to be if we do option A? You know, what will it be if we do B or C? And then what you try to take a look at is, you know, once you've identified the benefit, then you try to take a look at the cost. And you just do a simple cost-benefit ratio and you try to pick the one that you think is going to be the most beneficial for the least amount of cost. You know, for the longest period of time. And so right now, we're still trying to pursue some costing options or some costing answers, you know, with respect to the railroad relocation. Because it's just it's a very specialized field of study. And, you know, you're out, not only are you moving a railroad, which is, doesn't happen very often, but you're trying to do it across a river and through a floodplain, or a floodway, if you will. So, you know, all the environmental issues that you can dream up, I mean, those will be present and will have to be dealt with in some fashion. So, you know, I can understand why it takes a little while to do that, but yet we've got a looming deadline. January 15th of next year is the 2017 deadline for projects that we are to submit to the Indiana Department of Transportation. So we have to make a decision sometime between now and the 15th of January which one of these we want to try to pursue, or at least to submit to the Indiana Department of Transportation, and sort of get it on their list and, you know, start going through the process to have something done.
Now, Indiana Railroad Company owns the railroad?
It's the Louisville and Indiana Railroad Company, LIRC is okay. The initials that they go by. They own the roadbed, they own the ground, the dirt, and they own the rails, but they've leased it all to CSX. And, you know, I've not seen the lease, but CSX has put $100 million into upgrades on this line that they don't own, and that infers to me that they have a really long lease, you know, and they have the right to be able to run trains over that track pretty much at their schedule. So we anticipate a significant increase in train traffic. You know, what this is doing for CSX is it's shortening their trip from Louisville to Indianapolis. I mean, right now they have to go through Cincinnati and then, you know, up into Ohio and then across into Indianapolis. And, you know, anybody who could just pull out a map can see the value to the railroad of just coming directly from Louisville to Indianapolis. It's a relatively flat and relatively straight route. So, you know, I understand why they're coming. And from that perspective, you know, more power to them. But they're coming through our town, and so we're going to have some kind of a response to this. And so that's what we're endeavoring to create.
Have there been any discussions with CSX?
Oh, we've met with them. Golly, this is December, so you're in your 12th month. I bet we've met with them half a dozen times, you know, since the first of the year. Yeah, and it's all about trying to gather data and sort of determine where they are. The last meeting we had with them was, I want to say, November 17th. They informed us that they'd made a change in their construction schedule, that they had anticipated replacing the Flat Rock River Bridge in 2017, but that's been pushed off to 2018. And other construction activities have been brought forward. They intend to complete the continuously welded rail from Seymour up to Louisville, or excuse me, Seymour up to Indianapolis. That will happen in 2017, and that's going to cause that bridge to be deferred until 2018.
So they've been responsive and cooperative throughout this.
Yeah, they have.
For the
yeah,
most part.
Yeah. They've been very responsive. Yeah. When we've called, they've been willing to meet, return our phone calls. So it's, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, I've been hearing more and more about IU's new architecture program beginning to take shape here in Columbus. Uh-huh. You mentioned this before. How much is the city working with IU on this?
Oh, hand in glove. Yeah, we are very interested in seeing this come to fruition. Indiana University's been present, the IU Bloomington campus, I should say, has been present in Columbus for quite some time. They've got an activity here they called IU Center for Art and Design, or what we call IU CAD. And I want to say it's been in Columbus for at least 5 years, maybe a little bit longer. You know, that's been a partnership between IU Bloomington and the City of Columbus and some residents here, frankly, who have, you know, made contributions to Indiana University that have helped fund that program. What we want to be able to do is sort of take this to the next level. And from the community's perspective, you know, the interest, part of what you have to understand is that we have a significant architectural legacy here, but most people who live here, it's just the way things are, right? I mean, that building was always there. You know, it was built in 1940 or it was built in 1960 or what have you. And so we begin to get a little bit concerned about preservation and just how all these buildings are going to be preserved. Because the City of Columbus, you know, if we have 70 noteworthy structures, you know, buildings, landscapes, and public art, the City of Columbus owns City Hall, you know, a few fire stations, six fire stations, and, you know, a few parks. That's it. The rest of it's all held by other parties. And so, you know, how do we help them preserve, you know, what they've got? And we think that maybe a good first step with respect to preservation is promotion, you know, being able to understand the significance of what it is that you have. And we believe that the IU Master's in Architecture program will allow people who live here, as well as people who live around the world, you know, to sort of focus on what's going on here and focus on the treasure that we've got. And that will help us, you know, identify its importance or understand it a little better so that preservation becomes a little bit more of an issue and something that we're willing to invest some money in. Because at the end of the day, you know, that's what it's going to take. But yeah, we've had the opportunity to work with folks from IU Bloomington and look forward to continuing to do so. Yeah.
And So I take it that the new IU degree program would grow out of the current space that that CAD program is at.
I don't know about that. You know, now we've not had a lot of conversations about space requirements, but my anticipation is that they would need something a lot larger than where they are today.
And I read up too that there is a need for more architects. So of course, IU is looking to expand this program, and it also helps the city of Columbus. So it's really a win-win for both.
I think it does. I think there is a larger market for architecture students or architecture graduates than what's presently being met. And you got to remember too that not every architectural graduate works in architecture. I mean, you know, they can work for facility management companies, just like not every lawyer practices law. I mean, you know, some of them work in a corporate environment. It's a similar kind of an issue with respect to architects. So that's part of where the demand comes from. It's just maybe a little bit broader, a little wider than we might have initially realized. But yeah, we think the opportunity is a significant one, and Columbus has been here for quite some time, so it's great for us to been here for quite some time with a significant architectural program, is what I'm trying to say. And so it's important for us to see somebody like Indiana University recognize its value and offer to put it to use.
Today is Tuesday, even though this gets aired on Wednesday, so there's a city council meeting tonight.
Yes.
Two companies, Lindell North America and Tallman Equipment Company, seeking tax abatements. You mentioned that there's a utilities meeting or budget meeting.
Yeah, the utilities will present their budget for 2017. That'll be presented tonight, hopefully approved by the city council. We've got pretty favorable utility rates. You know, when you combine the wastewater and freshwater systems that we've got, our rates typically are in the top five or the bottom five, depending on your perspective, the better five within Indiana. And so, we don't see that changing. And we feel like we've made the infrastructure investments that we need that will keep it from changing for the foreseeable future. So so I don't anticipate any issues. But yeah, that's going to get presented tonight.
And you see any issues with those tax abatements coming up too tonight?
I really don't think so. Yeah. You know, Tallman and Lindahl have both been in Columbus for a little while. Tallman recently built a new facility that was the recipient of some tax abatements. This is an expansion, you know, on that effort, and I would think that it would be similarly viewed and approved. Lindahl is a new expansion. Presently, they lease space on the north side of town, so we're happy to be able to keep them in Columbus. You know, they are headquartered in Germany, and it was one of the companies that I visited in my trip over there last April. So it's heartening to see that come to fruition. And I think they're looking at a couple hundred jobs. I don't remember the number right off the top of my head, but yeah, we're excited to have them in Columbus.
That's interesting too. The first time I've heard about a city having to tweak ordinances to restrict abandoned vehicles on the street, but this is coming more from recreational vehicles that are being, parked downtown?
Yeah, the abandoned vehicles is the name of the ordinance, okay? So, you know, it defines a bunch of different things, and so we probably shouldn't get too attached to that label. But we've had some complaints from people who live downtown, and, you know, where parking is sometimes limited, and you know, you're sort of restricted to on-street parking, that we've got folks who have left their pickup truck and their trailer, you know, in the same place for a few days, or maybe they park it too close to the corner or to the alley, and so it's difficult to see around. And you'd like to be able to go out and encourage some compliance with good neighborliness. And when you find out that, well, maybe your ordinance wasn't as clearly written as it could have been, then you realize that maybe you need to make a change. And so that's what we're trying to do here, is just clean up some of the language in these ordinances that allow us to go to somebody who has parked a bus, let's say, or an RV, you know, in an area that's really more appropriate for automobiles. You know, maybe the street's not that long, or the street's really not that wide, or there's really not that much space available to begin with, and to encourage them to, you know, put that someplace where it ought to be, you know, in some kind of storage area, Campgrounds of America, or what have you. That's sort of the background behind those ordinances that will come up tonight. Those were passed on first reading 2 weeks ago, so I don't anticipate, you know, any additional concerns to be expressed tonight.
And just for those who don't live here, Columbus, there are no parking meters downtown, right? It's 2 hour, is it 2 hour time?
Three.
3 hour time limit. which would take care of long-term storage on the downtown city streets. But so this must be more for further out.
Residential areas,
right,
yeah, where
right.
there is no restriction on parking. There's no meters, there's no signs. What you're talking about is, in general, our downtown area has a three-hour limitation or a three-hour area. And once you're in the area, you're limited to 3 hours there. What we're talking about here, though, are areas outside that area that would be primarily residential.
Before we go, I just wanted to, you know, it's the end of the year. It's been a full year, your first year as mayor. How was it? What did you learn?
Well, you know, you learn a lot. But I've had a good time. I mean, this has been an enjoyable experience. There are some challenges. The railroad, you know, that we talked about earlier is one of significance. But we've had some significant successes as well. I feel really good about what we've been able to do. And you know, it's with respect to State Street. I mean, the project, we were able to get it back up and running and get the local people there somewhat energized into the project. and we've got some construction crews out there now that will, you know, continue to work as long as the weather allows them. We've also, you know, made a few steps forward with respect to a few other projects, riverfront development being one of them. And we've begun to engage in a much broader conversation about the effects of drug use in this community. And, you know, the first step, I think, in terms of solving any problem is to recognize what it is and talk about what, you know, the extent of the problem and what the solutions are. And it's vexing, and there's no question around that. But, you know, we've begun the discussion, and we've got some people, you know, in the room who, you know, bright minds. So hopefully we can come forward with a response sometime next year that will be meaningful. Yeah.
Have you accomplished what you hoped to in year one? You know, if I were to ask you back in January, you know, it's your first year in mayor now, it's been a full year.
Yeah. Yeah, we, you know, I think what we talked about back in January was trying to reconnect with city employees. And I believe that we've been able to do that. You know, I wanted Columbus to be a good employer, a fun place to work. And so we started the year by telling people to do good and have fun. Because what we do is we serve. I mean, we're picking up your garbage or picking up your limbs, or we've got police or fire, you know, that provide protection for yourself or your property. And so, you know, find a way to enjoy doing that because it's good work. And you know, you need to come to work every day excited to be there. And I feel like we've turned a corner there. I really do. I think that Columbus is again perceived as a great place to do business, a great place to work. At the same time, you know, I've wanted to reach out, you know, because I know, like especially with respect to the railroad issue that we talked about, we're going to need help from entities outside of our city limits. And the same thing applies to the drug abuse issues. I mean, we're not going to solve that, you know, on our own. We're going to need participation at the state level and maybe at the federal level. So I've made it an effort of mine, a particular point of emphasis to reach out to, you know, the legislators, folks in the governor's office, you know, folks in the state administration up in Indianapolis, and just to, you know, introduce myself, reintroduce Columbus, if they, you know, most everybody knows of us or knows that we're here, and just to let them know that we're interested in being a good partner. Whatever the program or the problem happens to be, you know, you can expect us to step forward and help with a solution. And I'm hopeful that that will pay off. I mean, you know, that we'll get something in return, but I just feel like it was the right thing to do. And so so we spent a good portion of this year trying to do that. I burned up a lot of, you know, gasoline going up to Indianapolis and back. But I felt like we've made some inroads. And part of the ways that you can see that is, we hosted a mayor's conference here a couple of weeks ago, and it was one of the best attended ones that I've been to. And I'd like to think that, you know, people wanted to hear what we had to say. I got appointed to a couple of, you know, governmental committees up in the State House. So, you know, I felt like that there was, you know, a little bit of an understanding that, yeah, you know, we're doing the right things down here and people appreciate it. So I felt like those were, you know, success points for us, and we'll continue that, you know, into next year as we try to, you know, address, as I said, you know, some of these other issues that we've got, be it the railroad, drug use, or the riverfront, or what have you.
And you mentioned a lot, but are there any of those in particular that, you know, you're saying, you know, we can do this better?
Well, I mean, you know, again, 70% of the city's budget is employee related, and the point with respect to that statistic is that, we're all about people. You know, we've got 425 to 450 full-time equivalents. We probably got another 100 to 150 part-timers. And just making sure that we've attracted the appropriate talent and that they're motivated and well-led. I mean, that's really a big part of what a mayor's job is to do. Now, I don't reach all those people. I can't. So I try to work through the department heads and through the people that you know that we have closest in here. We've got two folks who act as deputy mayors, Mary Ferdon and Dave Hayward, and I've given them a fair amount of responsibility and authority to you know to go out and make these things happen. And I'm just real pleased, you know, with the results. So, you know, I would say that's probably the most easily identified success that we've got. People are happy to work for the city.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate
it.
You're welcome. You're welcome.